This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. The morning run continues with me, Sharad Kutan, and Tan Chung Han and Kusu Chuang. We have the Wolf of Wall Street, Inter Bena, as well as a UBS Millionaire Survey. A survey, Han, I'm guessing none of us in the studio were asked or participated in.
Yeah, unfortunately not. Maybe not yet. Hopefully we'll make it on that survey one day. All right, let's start with this story here. You know, once again, another development in relation to 1MDB. So apparently you've got Red Granite Pictures, or their lawyers, apparently in negotiations or in talks with the U.S. Justice Department to settle a lawsuit. And this lawsuit stems, from the allegations that the movie, The Wolf of Wall Street, that was funded by money siphoned out of 1MDB. Like the question that keeps coming up, whenever I see these 1MDB related developments, is that when will we see the end of this entire fiasco? I mean, what do you think, Chuang? Will we ever see the end of this?
And well, yeah, we will eventually, but it'll take years because there's so many suits and claims on the 1MDB funds that it's going to take basically a really long time for this resolution to occur. The movie and how it's funded is, I think, it's a smaller component of what the Department of Justice wants. But, as they say, you start with a small and then you end up with a big.
Because the other issue is that there are many investigations now happening in jurisdictions outside of Malaysia. In Malaysia, officially, the story has ended. There's been closure. That, of course, is made problematic by the fact that the story continues to unfold in other jurisdictions. And so that's a contradiction that needs to be, in some ways, dealt with by the Malaysian government. And without the political will to deal with that contradiction, I don't see an end to this.
Yeah, that's right. So it's not just the U.S. Department of Justice. You've got the Swiss Attorney General authorities in Singapore, their central bank, as well. So you've got plenty of activity, going on beyond our shores. Now, despite the official narrative that 1MDB is done and dusted with, at least here in Malaysia, yet we are seeing its effects are still being felt out there in the markets, and specifically that Bandar Malaysia project, right? So you've got comments from the Prime Minister Dato Sri Najib Tun Razak now saying that the request for proposals for that Bandar Malaysia project, that will go on, or they will open soon. Those are RFPs all the way till June 30th. And then after that, by July 14th, hopefully we'll find out who the new master developer is for that Bandar Malaysia project, who will replace Iskandar Waterfront and CREC.
Well, until today, the shareholders and basically Malaysians don't really know the reasons why Iskandar Waterfront and CREC were taken off and terminated as joint venture partners.
But there was a statement.
Conditions precedent, but we don't actually know what those conditions, which conditions were not met. This kind of sends all kinds of weird signals to foreign investors because, there's all kinds of issues with contract sanctity and government undertakings, and you really have to question where foreign investors sit on this whole equation.
I mean, you quoted Han yesterday, UB Kehien, on this, right? The kind of problem that this particular project is going to cast over all projects involving government, because the kind of explanation that was given by Prime Minister's department seemed to suggest that this was a strategic move, getting out of the deal with IWC and CREC and moving it's kind of Waterfront City, right?
Mm, right.
And coming back to and they're now doing a new deal, that somehow this was an advantageous move, but then cast the government as being somewhat unreliable in terms of its commitments.
Yeah, so the word that UOB Kehien used was murkiness. Okay, murkiness. And perhaps this may feed into the broader market sentiment. Okay, but now I think to be clear here and to be fair, those two ideas. One idea being that Malaysians will still be net beneficiaries in the long run from Bandar Malaysia. That idea is not necessarily mutually exclusive. From the travails that we're seeing with 1MDB and Bandar Malaysia. Those two appear to still be going on. Because on one hand, yes, the Bandar Malaysia project holds plenty of potential, and now under this new deal with the Ministry of Finance retaining all 100% of the equity stake in this project, project. You know, that should bode well. You know, again, in other words, we get to keep all of the, you know, the benefits here, so to speak, right? As opposed to under the previous deal, 60% would have gone off to Iskandar Waterfront Holdings and CREC.
Well, that's on the assumption that the finance ministry retains all 100% going forward. But it's not the case, because obviously with the narrative as it is, Dalian Wonder is the next consortium in the picture. But, you know, on a really larger basis...
As a developer, though.
Yeah, but on a larger, more macro basis for a country which is outwardly facing and which does... rely on external funds, you know, we've got to be sending, you know, more positive signals to the international investor community.
Yeah, you know, certainly. But real quick, just to be clear here, so, you know, the Prime Minister did confirm that, you know, there were talks in China during his time in China over the weekend with Dalian Wonder, but no details and no agreement, you know, so that is still up in the air. July 14th, that's when we expect to know expect to know who that new master developer is for Bandar Malaysia. And just real quick, though, in another related development, you've got Tan Sri Dr. Muhammad Irwan Seriga Abdullah, who is the Treasury Sec-Gen. He has now been appointed as the chairman of both TRX City and Bandar Malaysia.
And this is uncontroversial? Because he's, of course, from the Ministry of Finance.
Right, yes. You know, and TRX City is, you know, wholly owned by the Ministry of Finance. You know, and, you know, he was also on the board of 1MDB as well. You know, so he's there.
Okay. Interbina, also in the news, IPO public tranche has been oversubscribed by over 42 times.
All right, so you got Interbina. Chuang, you spoke to them recently on the Breakfast Grill here. Before we get into some of their numbers here, you know, what were your key takeaways from that grill? Earlier this week or last week?
Yeah, so key takeaways. For me, the one of the main things was the fact that he had to go to basically the equity capital markets to raise funds. And as you know, any businessman would know, when you raise money by selling shares in your business, that is the most, I guess, pecunious way or the most expensive way, because you relinquish ownership of your business. Better, I think, as a business person myself, that you raise funds without relinquishing control of your company. But he lamented that basically he had to go to equity capital markets because he couldn't raise bonds, he couldn't really go to the money markets, he couldn't basically go to the debt capital markets. So, you know, be that as it may, but on the qualitative side, his business is basically the builder behind the big time developers. So the Cityas, the IJMs of this world, sorry, the UEMs of this world, the Marsings of this world. The Marsings of this world will basically sell you the concept and the township. The building per se is done by people like Interbina. So these guys are the ones with the diggers, with the cement boys, with the steel boys, and they go in and they actually build the houses and those offices. So these are the real boffins behind it. And they've been doing it for decades.
Right. Cement boys or girls, you know, not to be...
Oh, all girls, yeah.
Right. But you know, real quick, the public tranche for Interbina's IPO that is set for May 25th, so that part has been oversubscribed almost 43 times. So perhaps, you know, they made the right decision there, right, because of their challenges in trying to raise or tap other capital markets or other aspects of the capital market. You know, with this IPO, you know, looks like there is plenty of demand here. And when I saw that number there of, you know, being oversubscribed of 42.74 times, I'm noticing a trend, because if you look at some of the other IPOs that we've seen so far this year, okay, let's look at the ACE market listings, because Interbina is going for a listing on the ACE market, not the main market. Cabinet Holdings on May 22nd, that's your IPO, oversubscribed 48 times. Eversafe Rubber, oversubscribed 65 times. Looking at the main market, though, you got EcoWorld International, oversubscribed 9 times. Surbodynamic, you know, on 5 times. Kipreit, 5 times as well. So, you know, it seems that there is plenty of demand, you know, for these kind of issuances, you know, going into the Malaysian equity markets. You know, perhaps, Chuang, what do you think? Is this a case of, you know, ample demand but not enough supply?
Yes, it is. It is that as well. But it's also a case where the merchant bankers are the ones who are advising the companies themselves to have a very, very small retail portion. In fact, it's probably the smallest portion out of the whole IPO, and, you know, to concentrate more on the institutional booming allocations. And, you know, I guess there's no right or wrong, but as a business person, it's easier to manage, several, as in less than 10, say, institutional investors than, say, 2,000 retail investors. you know, who only hold 1,000 shares or 100 shares each, and they've all got a say. I mean, when you own shares in a company, all of you have a say in basically how you run the company.
Well, perhaps the idea is that these retail investors, you know, are not subject to, you know, or they may have more short-term strategies in mind versus institutional investors who, theoretically speaking, would be there for the long run. As opposed to if you compare it with the Chinese markets, 80% of the participants are from the retail side. Hence, you see these massive swings. Right? A couple of years ago, they just lost trillions, you know, just in one fell swoop. So you have that. But nevertheless, you know, when you look at just the broader trends here in the Malaysian equity space, you are also seeing the number of listed companies shrinking. 960 listed companies back in 2009. By the end of this month, May 2017, we could just be up to down to 902 companies here, right? So I think you've got fewer companies that are being listed and perhaps fewer choices for equity investors.
Yeah, it's quite an apt observation because back in the day, in the early 90s, I think, the Malaysian weighting of the MSCI Asia Pacific Index was quite sizable. It was about 6 or 7%, and now I think we're way down to about 2 or 3%.
And real quick, you know, with that in mind, you've got the SC Securities Commission, who are then aiming to develop ETFs, exchange-traded funds. Hopefully, they'll give more options to investors out there.
Okay, we're coming up to the news shortly, and after that, of course, we'll have the opening numbers of the stock market. We'll continue this conversation. We'll have more analysis on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.